is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lombardi Line on a Tuesday alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi out on the East Coast at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Got lots of NFL talk to get to over the course of the next 2 hours, a number of quarterback injuries and notable star injuries to update you on. But we got to start with what we saw last night in primetime Monday Night Football. The Cowboys get a much needed bounce back win over the Los Angeles Chargers, 20-17. Your final score, a win and cover for Dallas. Total stays under, Michael. And I'm a little bit bummed because obviously I was doing so well with my contest plays. I was 4-0 on Sunday, had the Chargers plus 2.5 to close things out, which it doesn't come through. And you kind of saw this coming because as we were talking about it yesterday, the more and more we spoke, the more you were talking me into Dallas is probably going to win this game and get it done.
You know, look, I think, like I wrote about today, all these three-point games, you just have no confidence in the Chargers winning them. And, you know, everybody gets excited the first drive of the game. They go right down the field and score. But, you know, when have the Chargers played good defense? I mean, last night, the two highest-paid players on the Chargers defense, Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, combined for four tackles and a sack. You know, you never felt Joey Bosa's presence in the game. And, you know, they can't get any continuity. And then at the end of the half, you know, how many times do you have to just a guy that's supposed to be so analytically in tuned, right? And he's supposed to be so connected to the numbers. And he is the poster child for the analytical community. How he can mess up the middle eight as badly as he does, I have no idea. I have no idea. And they, you know, and when you look at these numbers, Herbert just doesn't win these close games. And in the second half, once people get used to what's going on, I think they kind of settle in and he has a hard time. The other factor, I think he missed some throws that he typically doesn't miss. I don't know how you felt about that, but I thought he missed some throws, especially the deep one over by their bench to Keenan Allen.
Yeah, throwing the ball high, missed some receivers, throwing it behind him. But I don't understand. I don't want to blame the broken finger because it was on his other hand. So I don't know how much that can really impact your accuracy from that standpoint. What did you take away from that?
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know why it would affect him, you know, but he never felt like he got in rhythm. I never felt like he was comfortable. You always felt like there was a discomfort in terms of that he was feeling the pressure, feeling the heat, even though it took, what, till about the 58-minute mark before Micah Parsons got a sack, you know? And so, but yet he felt it. And then, you know, he gets scrambled and he's got to make a throw and he throws an interception, which really was related to the pressure, not to him making a mistake in terms of reads. So, you know, it's forever the case with the Chargers. So they lose the opening game against Miami, right? They have a chance to... Miami misses the extra point. They get the ball under 2 minutes to go, just barely, have a chance to win the game, go give up. He makes a horrendous decision on a throw and gets grounding calls. So now it's a 4th and 16, doesn't convert. They've got a chance to tie the game against the Titans before you get to overtime or win the game, but they tie it. And then in overtime, they get the ball first and have to give it back to the Titans. They lose that game. And now this game. So, you know, you could say, well, we're really close, but you never win close games. So what good is being close, right?
Yeah.
What good is it?
Yeah, speaking to that, 2-3 this season, all 5 games decided by one score. And you look at those losses, all close games, 36-34 to the Dolphins, 27-24 to the Titans, now 27-17 to Dallas. And I know we're going to talk a little bit later on in the show, like delve in deeper to what you wrote about in your article today and the Brandon Staley of it all, how underachieving this Chargers talent is largely based on the talent that they have. But also, like, this was just a weird, clunky game on both sides, Michael. I feel like you could say a lot of the same things from an underachieving standpoint about the Dallas Cowboys. They have all this talent and it's not really living up to expectations. Neither team could run the football yesterday. Dak Prescott was your leading rusher for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, but look, you know, Dallas for all, you know, and everybody hates Mike McCarthy as a play caller. Everybody hates Mike. How many times do we hear what a great play caller Kellen Moore is? Okay, how many times do we hear that, right? We heard it the entire game. The entire game. I mean, McCarthy averaged 5-6 a play. You know, the Chargers averaged 4-5 a play. McCarthy averaged, what, 7 yards per pass attempt? The Chargers averaged 5.8. Like, at some point, McCarthy was managing the game to try to slow the game down, control it, and he did. You know, I thought he made a mistake. He should have kicked the field goal right at the end of the half. He didn't. Gave the Chargers the ball with momentum, knowing the Chargers are going to get the ball to start the second half, right? And the Chargers get the ball with 2 minutes to go in the half, and the Cowboys still have two timeouts, and they have all their timeouts. But naturally, they don't take any of the Cowboys' two timeouts away from them. And they end up, and those 3 points that they give up at the end of the half cost them, along with the 3 points they don't get at the start the second half because he decides to go for it on fourth down and doesn't get it.
Can you help me understand a little bit more Mike McCarthy's kind of decision making there late in the half, not wanting the timeout mm-hmm. with 8 seconds left?
Yeah, I can't explain that. Look, I don't know why he was thinking that because he had two in his pocket. So if he stops the clock at 8 seconds, he gets a play. You know, he gets a play there, and, you know, and then he can go forward. I think it was at that point in the game, it was, let me see here. I think it was, so it was when he stops the clock, you know, no, that was fourth down. Before the field goal, we're talking about before the field goal, right?
Correct. Yes.
So it was second and seven. So if he stops the clock, he's third and seven. He's still not going to, you know, he still could run one more play, right, especially to the end zone.
Yeah, it just felt ultra conservative to me, and I wonder, and like obviously, like you said, you get 3 points in that situation. It ends up being a field goal game at the end, so it's good. But I just feel like you had the opportunity to get another play. I didn't really understand why you just
and he kept, still had a timeout. He could have thrown the ball in the middle of the field, but if he throws it in the middle of the field, it's only going to make the field goal easier. Is he going to score a touchdown from the 14? I mean, it's worth a shot, right?
That's what
it's worth
thinking.
A shot to go in the end zone. You know, and but oftentimes on those red zone plays, if it's not there right away, you got to start moving around. And I'm sure he felt like if we move too much, we may miss points.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things that I do think that the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy, from his coaching standpoint, did well in this game. I just wonder if you have this kind of, I'm going to call it ultra conservative. You might disagree, but if you have that approach, how that's going to fare for you when you do play better teams down the line.
I thought he was, you know, I think you could certainly say it there, but I was surprised he went for it on the first drive of the game, right? When he scored the touchdown, I was surprised I thought he was being really, you know, I thought he was there on fourth and one. I'm thinking, oh, this is really Mike's listening to the analytics here. I mean, this isn't like Mike to go for it on fourth and one at their 18-yard line and made a great call and got it in. So I don't know. I'm agreeing with you. I think with 8 seconds, why not take a shot at the end zone?
And
feel like you could make a play, especially considering that you had matchups you liked in the game. Yeah.
And again, I want to make sure we do credit the Cowboys, who are now 10-1 after a loss the last three seasons, been very good in a bounce back spot. And they needed this win, I think, just as a team from an emotional, mental standpoint, after getting waxed the way that they did this past week against San Francisco. Dak Prescott said after the game he would qualify it as a must win. Take a listen.
Yeah, it was a must win.
Why? I mean, it's early. Early
in the season, but 3-3, 4-2, or 3-3. That was it's a huge difference. It just is. I mean, yeah, like I get exactly what you're saying. It's early in the season. I've been in the 3-5 season that we turned it around and went on a win streak and won the division. So I get what you're saying, but 4-2, second road win of the year against a great team, against a great offense, good defense, great defense. Going into the bye week, yeah, I mean, we talked about after last week not allowing this thing to landslide. And obviously, I think a win like this allows you to really close that book.
And I don't know if must win is necessarily the right terminology, but I will say since 2000, the Cowboys have started 4-2 or better 9 times. They've made the playoffs in 7 of those seasons, including each of the last 5 in that instance. But when they've been 3-3 after 6 since 2000, they've missed the postseason 6 of 8 times. So there is at least some evidentiary support that is very different specifically for the Cowboys as an organization. And after a weekend, Michael, where both the 49ers and the Eagles go down in the NFC, important for them to get a lift.
And I think that was the factor of this. You can't keep getting behind Philly. You get a chance to gain a game on them. You blew a game against the Cardinals you shouldn't have lost, as you look at the Cardinals. So you did that. I would disagree calling this Charger defense great. They've got some great talent. They've paid a lot of money. I think they're in the top five of cap dollars allocated to this defense. But since Staley has been the head coach, they're 28th in points allowed, 29th in yards per play allowed, and 29th in EPA play expected points allowed. So I don't know how anybody could say this is a great defense. They have talent. They don't play great.
One last question here before we have to hit the break. Dak Prescott, we saw him be a little bit mobile, doing things outside of the pocket, and it paid off for him. Is that something you think we'll continue to see with Dak moving forward?
Yeah, I think you, in today's game, you got to move the quarterback. You got to move him around, especially in the red zone. Why are the red zone scoring so down? It's because you can't just run what everybody else is running in the red zone. You got to do some different things, and you got to move your quarterback. You got to separate it a little bit. It's hard. Those windows in that red zone are so tight, it's difficult. But I agree. You got to move them. I like that the fact they put bootlegs, they separated them. And it helps your running game because remember this, Stormy, the only play a quarterback blocks somebody on is on a boot or a naked. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to go out there with them.
Yeah, the first five games of the season had 45 yards on the ground. He had 40 this game against the Chargers, and just the movement that he had extending plays. It was really, really cool to see, and I hope that it continues for Dak. To your point about the red zone efficiency, another under game. 13-2 to the under this week in the NFL. We've got to take our first time out of the day, but when we return, lots of quarterbacks are dealing with injuries. We will break it down and how that impacts the line when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber. You can do so today by signing up at VSiN.com/subscribe. Just $19 for your first month. We've got some starting quarterback injuries to update you on across the National Football League, and there are a lot. Michael, but is that just this time of year? We're going into week 7 and guys are just banged up all over the place.
Well, I think there's a couple factors, right? We know that if you get a concussion in the NFL, you're not coming back after a week, which is probably a good thing, right? And then, you know, the one thing we do see is scoring is down. Defenses are playing better. Right. And quarterbacks are getting hit a hell of a lot more. Mm-hmm. People are running their I don't know how Sam Howe isn't on injury list. I have no idea. Like, they just keep letting him go. And like, somebody pay attention here. You know, I was shocked that Tyrod Taylor made it through the game. But I think a lot of this is there's more running in the sport. I mean, we love Anthony Richardson, but he played what? 2 games? Maybe he got hurt in the opener, missed 2 games with a concussion, then got hurt again. So, you know, I think eventually you're going to have to be careful. Jalen Hurts is running way too much too, Stormy. I think it's really that it's going to be affected. And even ones that don't run, like Garoppolo, who hasn't been running, he gets hurt. So you're going to have to do a good job. You got to get the ball to your hands quick. I mean, Miami's recipe to keep Tua on his 2 feet has worked out. We'll find out if that works this week against a good Philadelphia Eagle front.
Yeah, a lot of these guys have been taking shots. And because you mentioned Sam Howell, we were looking up the numbers yesterday, and Sam Howell at 34 times being sacked so far this year, still less than David Carr. I know he's on track for a high number, but David Carr at this point had 39 that year when he set the record for the number of sacks taken in season. So there's still hope for Sam Howell. Okay, we can wean that number down a little bit.
Can we just protect him
just
a little
protect
bit?
Protect him. He's okay. But let's start there with Anthony Richardson, who you mentioned with the Indianapolis Colts. The belief is that he's probably going to miss the rest of the regular season. This according to team owner Jim Irsay to ESPN this week, and said, while there's a debate going, he could undergo surgery in the next week. The decision ultimately will be up to Richardson, dealing with an AC joint sprain in his right throwing shoulder. This happened in the second quarter of the Colts week 5 game against the Titans. But Michael, I wonder with something like this, with leaving the decision up to Anthony Richardson and his team with what he wants to do, I worry almost to an extent, like, what if he says, I want to rehab this for a little while and you put off surgery and then you inevitably have to end up having surgery later and that just puts back the rehab process. That's where my mind goes with this. I just think, hey, get the surgery now, move on, put yourself in the best position to be ready for next year.
No question. And I agree with that. And I think Jim Irsay does too. And I would fully expect them to do that. Look, they're in trouble. I wrote about this today. They're in trouble. I mean, they're, now that Gardner Minshew's the guy, all the warts that are involved in the Colts team shine brighter. Look, this Josh Downs kid's been a really nice addition to their team, their third round pick, right? Alex Pierce is a good receiver. Now he's hurt. Their weapons offensively aren't great. The offensive line hasn't played to the level they need them to play. So now with Minshew, when you play Minshew, a little bit like when you play Baker Mayfield, pressure inside, make him stay in the pocket, force him to have to play big, don't allow him to have the area to throw the football, it becomes a real issue. And so this is going to get harder and harder for the Colts to win games, and I think they're not good enough on defense to really slow anybody down. I mean, that's my issue has always been. You know, that's my issue is I think once when you study the tape of the game and you see what Jacksonville did, Jacksonville, you know, went on a long drive, they controlled the game, and once they got a handle on Minshew and they knew who Minshew was, they packed the middle of the field, they dared him to throw the ball out, and they put someone in his face constantly. And he couldn't respond, and he turned the ball over at a rapid rate. I mean, they got a chance to go make it a 14-10 game. He throws the pick. Next thing you know, they're going into halftime 21-3.
Yeah, and I think it's a massive blow not only to the team this year and where the organization was hoping to go with him. You just get Jonathan Taylor back, and then he ends up being out for the remainder of the season. But also just in general, for his development as a young player, he was a guy who was looking to be ahead of schedule, was better than a lot of us anticipated, especially given the limited starting experience that he had in college, just 13 starts. And he's playing really well. So it's unfortunate, but I also understand the organization wanting to take the most cautious approach to him as they can for the future. The Colts this week getting 2 against the Browns, the total 39. Their updated in-season win total set at 7.5, currently sitting 3-3. But do they have 5 more wins in them with Gardner Minshew is the question. But speaking of them playing the Browns, still no firm update on the Deshaun Watson of it all. The Browns get their signature win and their big money quarterback nowhere in sight. Kevin Stefanski said he remains day-to-day.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to go down to the wire. It doesn't seem good. The line surprises me, Stormy. -2, mm-hmm. and circa I'm seeing at 1.5 today. You know, DraftKings here in New Jersey's -2. They're -2s painted. Like, I know P.J. Walker did not play very well. I know he turned the ball over, but he did make a couple plays. Longest pass play was 58 yards to Amari Cooper. And his next longest pass was 11, but they were able to run the ball for 160 yards against a very good 49er front. This front for Indianapolis isn't as good. Now, I know it's a road game, but it seems a little light to me. And then I ran my numbers this morning, and I was kind of right on the number. So I went from, you got to automatically take Cleveland in this game to, wait a minute, not so fast. If Watson plays, if you think today's Tuesday, if we think Watson's going to play, jump on this number. It'll go to 4.5 really quickly. But if this is staying here at 2 and even moving to 1.5, I think someone knows he's not playing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I look at that number and think, I mean, I trust the Browns defense so much. They're just going to torture Indianapolis. So I had the same thought process as you. So it's interesting that your numbers came out that way. This isn't a game that I have bet yet. Want to find out more information on the quarterback situation, obviously, see if that can help the cause. Another game, Michael, with injuries to both quarterbacks, it appears, is going to be in Bears Raiders coming up this week. Raiders, a 3-point favorite in Chicago, total low as well, 37.5. But Justin Fields unlikely to play with a dislocated thumb. Matt Eberflus called him doubtful. He is currently unable to grip the football. And then on the Raiders side, Jimmy G taken to the hospital in an ambulance at halftime this past weekend with a back injury. There were worries that it could be something internal, but Josh McDaniel saying it looks like they dodged a bullet from that area, but still waiting more information on his status for week 7.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, I would not rule Garoppolo out yet. I know that they don't have him up there, but if he didn't have any structural damage in terms of the kidney or any of those areas, he's not bleeding internally, that's a really good sign. Then it becomes a pain threshold, and does he get the reps? I think that's going to be the key. You know, as for Justin Fields, I don't anticipate him playing at all. Yeah. I think when you read all the TV doctors on Twitter. You know, we had Marcus Welby, MD. We had all these TV doctors. Now we got Twitter doctors. It's a great thing. But I'm going to tell you what, I'm impressed. I mean, they blow up the picture. They give you a full rundown. I mean, you get a better examination on Twitter on the injury than you do sometimes when you go see your own doctor, right?
Yep. You got the x-ray from somebody else, right? That this is what it could be.
Oh, look at his thumb. There's swelling in his thumb. That means he's out 4 to 6 weeks, you know? I mean, I've been with those doctors. I've never got an answer that fast, but these guys are pretty good.
Quick to the trigger there, Michael. The backup for Justin Fields would be Tyson Bagent, who we saw come into the game, an undrafted free agent from West Virginia Division II Shepherd University. But he actually played pretty well, 10 of 14, 83 yards, did have the pick as his arm got hit, but led that 77-yard eventual touchdown drive that gave them a little bit of life in that spot. If he does start, he will be the Bears' 29th starting quarterback since 2000, Michael.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not easy to watch the Bears' offense. And, you know, the running backs have been hurt. We know this, right? I mean, they have had injuries. They haven't played well. They've had injuries. And now they're getting a few guys back defensively, but they're still not effective defensively at all. I mean, their offensive line has dealt with injuries. Nate Davis is hurt. The running back Johnson and Travis Homer, who they got from Seattle, he's hurt. The secondary Stevenson, their corner that they drafted, is he going to play? You know, so they've got a lot of injuries over there on the defensive side of the ball. And remember, Eberflus was the guy that Josh McDaniels hired in Indianapolis before McDaniels didn't take that job, right? And so they're very, I mean, McDaniels knows him. He knows his scheme. He's played against him a lot. I think if Aiden O'Connell plays, that will really help, because the Bears are a team that rely on trying to be fast and trying to create turnovers with the speed of their defense, which they don't have great speed right now. And how they move the football with Badgett in the game, that's anyone's guess right now.
And that's worth noting what you said there about the Raiders quarterback as well. Yes, don't count out Jimmy G just yet, but if there is a situation where you need the backup in, despite Brian Hoyer coming in mid-game and kind of being that veteran level-headed presence mid-game, it would likely be the rookie Aiden O'Connell, who we saw start against the Chargers earlier this season.
Yeah, it'll be O'Connell if Garoppolo. Yep. It'll be Hoyer in an in-game situation. But this week, it could be O'Connell in a game because he's going to get a ton of reps.
Yep. Still updates to come on Trevor Lawrence, on Ryan Tannehill, on David Montgomery. The list of injuries is long this week, my friends, but we will get to it in a moment.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours.
Disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubts. No doubts. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi. No way or no doubt.
Michael, I told the people at home that we were going to stay away from injuries for a little while, and then I looked down at my sheet, and the first thing I put in here is injury-related, but I think it's a good one. So San Francisco, we know the last handful of years have had really solid seasons derailed by major injuries. This season, we're already seeing the injury bug creep up a little bit. Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, Trent Williams all going down in the same game. No way or no doubt, injuries will be the reason that San Francisco does not win the Super Bowl this year.
I think that's true. There's no doubt. I believe that. But you could say that for every team, right? Philadelphia can't afford to lose three or four of their key guys either. Trent Williams isn't going to be a problem. He's going to come back. You always worry about an oblique injury, especially they call it an oblique. What concerns you about that, and again, I'm not a doctor, but for McCaffrey, is sometimes they have those, you know, those hernias, those we call sports hernias. where you really, you know, they think it's an oblique, but they come to find out it's a sports hernia. It goes back to when Eric Wright played for the 49ers, kind of ruined his career because nobody knew what it was at the time. That's what you're hoping for, that McCaffrey doesn't have. And I'm sure he'll do whatever it takes to come back and get healthy. But every team, there's no doubt they have to stay healthy. This is a marathon. And who's ever the healthiest at the end of December and into January will win this, the best teams.
Absolutely. CMC, the most tenuous situation right now. Shanahan didn't offer a timeline on him just yet. Deebo Samuel and Trent Williams considered day-to-day with their injuries. They're laying 6.5 against the Vikings on Monday Night Football, so a little extra rest there. Robert Saleh on Good Morning Football today discussing a potential early return of Aaron Rodgers from the Achilles, saying the more you doubt him, the more fuel he has. He's on a mission, has repeatedly called the way that he is handling this rehab process unbelievable. Maybe call me one of the doubters, Michael. I don't know if we should be buying into this spectacle and being on the field pregame throwing already. So no way or no doubt, we should not overreact to the Aaron Rodgers post-op progress and pregame throwing spectacle right now.
No doubt we should not overreact. Okay, look, there's a difference between being cleared to play and playing at a high level, okay? And we saw this with Alex Smith coming back from that devastating injury that he had, right? And he took a long time to come back, and he wasn't healthy to play. If Rodgers could play after 4 months, which would be historic in Achilles tendon injuries history, that would be remarkable. Could he move around in the pocket? And is he going to play behind this horrendous offensive line that is going to cause more problems? I mean, look, they've lost Tucker. Last week, they lost their other right tackle. I mean, they're losing linemen left and right. No, they lost Tippmann, the right guard. So now they're playing backups. You're going to put him behind there? Can he move and get away from anybody? I don't think so. You know, look, we see this when we watch quarterbacks. Russell Wilson isn't the same athlete he was when he was younger in his career. He has a harder time getting away from people, doesn't run as fast. You're coming back off an Achilles, you're 40 years old. Now, look, I think it's a wonderful story, and I think it's inspirational to the Jets. And Rodgers, to me, is doing this to keep his team motivated, to keep the eye on the ball, or else things could go fall apart. But to think he could come back and play at a very high level, come on. Yeah. Please stop.
Thank you. It's Aaron Rodgers Tuesdays on McAfee today, so we'll see if anything notable comes from that conversation. Let's keep it moving. The Ravens, Steelers, Browns, and Bengals, all 500 or better through 6 weeks, Michael, and the AFC has not been as strong as it has in years past. No way or no doubt, at least two AFC wild cards will come from the North.
No doubt. You know, today when I looked at the who would make the playoffs, three NFC West teams make the playoffs, the Rams, the 49ers, and Seattle. I think there's no doubt two will make it from the North. I wouldn't be surprised if three made it, frankly. They're really good teams. I would make a strong case for whoever doesn't make it from the North to be the team that represents the South in the NFC because none of those teams are really good enough.
Yeah, the NFC South is ugly, isn't it? Winter is coming. We'll see who will be the king of the North, but I like that from the wild card perspective. Now, everybody expected and at times sounded like they wanted the Houston Texans to be bad, Michael, but they might be for real. Won three of their last four games, the lone loss in that span by less than a field goal. Their division odds have dropped from plus 475 a week ago to plus 275. No way or no doubt, the Houston Texans, they are alive to win that AFC South.
You know, they are live. There's no doubt. And let me tell you why. As the great Phil Leonardo said, let me tell you a couple, three things. They're good. Their offense is good. They haven't even run the football. They average 3.2 yards a carry. They haven't been able to run the ball. The longest run of the year is 17 yards. And yet they're still able to do things well offensively. They're 44% on third down. That's remarkable. That's really good for a team that can't run the football. Their quarterback is playing at a high, high level. Better than, you know, almost 7.8 yards per attempt. If Daniel Jones could get the 7-8 yards per attempt, there'd be a parade down the, you know, in New York City on Broadway if he could get that far. So that's really good. And they're going to continue to get better. They had a bunch of injuries in their offensive line. But the other thing I think we don't talk enough about is how good they are in the kicking game. They're very good in the kicking game. They play well in that phase. They'll win that phase against most teams they play. And because of that, if they play decent on offense and decent in the kicking game, they're good. Look, I think Slovic has done a really good job as the offensive coordinator. And for a team that relies on play action pass to be successful. With no running game, it's somewhat remarkable.
Who'd have thunk that of the rookie quarterbacks that were drafted, C.J. Stroud would go ahead and like lift himself up the way that he has here early. Been really fun to see, and good for Houston and DeMeco Ryans as well, which we might talk a little coach of the year a little bit later as well. He's kind of sneaking up that odds board. But let's keep it rolling. The Bears have lost 10 straight home games headed into Sunday's game against the Raiders. We already talked about the quarterback woes on both sides of things. But regardless, Michael, no way or no doubt, the streak stays alive because the Raiders are better equipped to win.
Well, I mean, you're asking me, I'm rooting for the Raiders. This is a hard one. I hate it when you just gave me that stat. You know, it's like, oh no, I hate those stats. It's like when they come out there and they start, you know, when Jake Elliott was getting ready to kick that field goal against the Jets, and All they could talk about is how he's made 72 straight and all of the, oh, okay, there it goes.
And
wide
when
right.
The Eagles had won 12 in a row historically against the Jets, too.
I mean,
throw
you're
that
just
in there.
Killing me. Stephanie, you're killing me with this one. No, I'll pass on this. I have no opinion on this, whether
all
they
right,
can or they
right.
can't.
Fair. How about this? There are 9-3-3 teams right now across the National Football League through week 6, Michael. The Saints, Falcons, Commanders, Rams, Jets, Bengals, Colts, Texans, and Raiders. No way or no doubt, the Saints are the worst of those 3-3 teams.
No way they're the worst. No.
No way? No, who's the worst?
The Saints, he said?
The Saints are the worst of those nine. No?
I would say of those teams you name, Washington's
Commanders?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. I mean, look, Washington won a game with less than 200 yards of offense. Their quarterback gets sacked. They gave up 400 yards of offense to the Atlanta Falcons, and the Falcons didn't run the ball, and everybody wants to bench Desmond Ridder. I mean, it's kind of comical, right? So, yeah, they're not good on defense. I misjudged them on defense based on their numbers from last year. Mm. They're not. The Saints are very good defensively. The Saints are very good defensively. They're just horrible on offense. You know, the Washington are not good in any area. The Raiders are basically just average in a lot of it. The Raiders they scored 21 points. I mean, they've won three games. They've kind of found a way to win, which is great for the Raiders. But they really, I mean, last week without getting the ball to Davante Adams to win was really an amazing thing. And they had opportunities to get him the football. So, yeah, I'm going to go Washington here.
I say that.
When you look at on paper, they play the Giants. Giants beat them twice last year. You would think Washington would be their favorite in the game. I'm not sure that's right.
It's funny you say that, because that's exactly what I was looking at was, hey, they're a 2-point road favorite this week against the Giants. So does that say more about the Commanders or more about the Giants based on what we've seen so far?
I'm not sure about that one. I don't know. I mean, I don't trust it.
I got one more. 45 seconds. Caleb Williams, not a lock to be the number one overall pick. Nowhere, no doubt.
No doubt. Don't finish it. No doubt. 45. Look, everybody just runs away with a tank for Tua. Justin Herbert was really good. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. And if Caleb Williams wants to come in with attitude that I don't want to play for your team, look, buddy, we'll find somebody else to play quarterback.
Caleb Williams still a $5 favorite to be the first overall selection in the 2024 NFL draft. Drake May sitting there at plus 550 as the next shortest shot. But Caleb Williams got brought back down to earth a little bit this past week thanks to those old Fighting Irish. We will talk a little bit more college football in hour two of the program. Excited to have our guy Aaron Moore, who is going to join us in about a half an hour or so. But when we return, resetting, we'll continue to recap Monday Night Football. What is the future for the Chargers based on all of the talent that they have? Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN.